We could probably spend an entire week talking about pesticides and the many concerns about them. We won't, but a bunch of people will spend part of this weekend talking about pesticides and related issues. Ashland hosts a conference called Pesticides, People, Pollinators, and the Planet tomorrow at Southern Oregon University. The name pretty well lays out what will be discussed. We'll start at the top of the list with pesticides and Kim LaValle, the executive director of the Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides, abbreviated as NCAP. Kim, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Jeffrey, thank you for having me.
There are lots of anti-pesticide groups. What makes NCAP different from the other bunch?
Well, that's a great question, Jeffrey. And I think what sets us apart is that we really focus on protecting community and environmental health by helping people find pragmatic solutions, alternatives to pesticides from an ecologically based standpoint, to reduce the use of pesticides, to eliminate pesticides. And we work in three areas, water and wildlife, healthy food and farms, and healthy people and communities.
All right. I noticed that you once worked with the Center for Rural Affairs. Is it safe to assume you've had lots of discussions with farmers and rural landowners about the use of pesticides?
Yes, that is very much true. I worked for 10 years on federal farm policy and moving both policy and appropriations to support more alternatives to pesticides, whether it was in conservation programs, organic research, sustainable agriculture. So I came home when I came to NCAP, and we continue to work with the landowners, farmers, and a variety of partners, and looking, you know, to research and demonstrate actual alternatives, to look at pest problems, to understand pests and natural predators such as beneficial insects, and other approaches that come from an ecologically based set of practices. So we're more about the practices. A lot of people think of products when they think about pesticides. Oh, I just get this can or this spray. And we're talking about how to understand pests and prevent them in the first place, build the resiliency of plants and soil to resist pests. So we can talk more about all the different ins and outs of that, but that's how we're unique, yes.
The product part of it is probably what makes the task, I would think, most difficult. I mean, because it's so easy in today's world to understand that if I've got this, I will get a can of that and spray it, and that should take care of my problems. But it's a whole lot more complicated when you start looking at the science of it.
That's right, and some people might have understand or have heard of integrated pest management, and that's the idea of a set of practices where you're looking at, you know, understanding more deeply the pest and where it's coming from. So if you have ants, say, in your house or mice, what do you do about that? Do you get some kind of chemical? Or do you look at how to prevent the pest issues by understanding their behavior? For instance, if they're sugar ants, they're looking for food. And if you can put your food in containers that are sealed, you have less likely, you know, of a problem. You want to monitor and correctly identify pests, deal with the problems early. Understand that if you have one mouse, that's still a problem because that means there are others that can get in and they breed. And that's kind of thinking about thresholds of action. So if we have one mouse, we want to, you know, get on that. And if we have one ant, it's not so much of a problem. So that's what we mean by understanding thresholds. And then you want to try all of the different approaches before you ever reach for pesticides. That's an approach that we use, and a lot of people also have heard of organic. There's organic land care, organic landscaping. If you have problems in your home, you can now find people who are certified in green pest management, and they use integrated pest management, and they will also sometimes use organic if you ask for them to not use any, you know, chemicals and helping you. But there's a lot you can do, and our website, which is pesticide.org, actually has a lot of information, fact sheets about actual alternatives for a lot of major pest problems, like from mosquitoes to aphids to, I know some people are concerned about spiders. And then we also have information about the toxicology behind actual pesticides. So if someone has got a product and they're looking at it and they're concerned, they can read about why it's a problem and then learn more about what the alternatives are. So it's a mindset. It's changing a mindset to think about things in a more ecological way, such as if you're gardening and you don't want to use chemicals, you have to learn more about soil management, how to, right plant for right place. There's a lot of techniques. So,
Kim LaValle is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the executive director at the Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides, NCAP. She'll be in Ashland this weekend for the Pesticides, People, Pollinators, and the Planet Conference, starting Saturday at 8 at Southern Oregon University's Stevenson Union. You can join us now on the Jefferson Exchange. Maybe you have some questions about ways that you have handled pests of whatever kind on your own property, or had some questions about how best to deal with those. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Your point is well taken about knowing which kind of pest you're dealing with, though, because it occurs to me that you wouldn't want to take the same approach to sugar ants as you would to carpenter ants or vice versa in your house.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's important to identify what type of pest or what type of ant or even mosquito. There are some mosquitoes that carry Zika virus and other mosquitoes that do not. There's a tendency to want to take action, and to spray. And, I think a lot of your listeners may be interested in knowing about mosquito control and abatement. There's new ways of approaching that, which is to do education in the community, to remove standing water, and educate people about the mosquitoes and how to prevent mosquito bites by wearing long sleeves and long pants in the evening. But knowing, what mosquito and what behaviors they have are really important. I think that there's a lot of, the Zika virus is in the news. It's a very terrible disease, or it's a vector. It carries the mosquito. There's a type of mosquito that carries the Zika virus. And so there's a lot of concern about that. It also leads to more spraying that is not, at times, not needed. So, and we want to think about, how do we prevent these pests? And how do we handle them in ways that are healthy for people and communities and wildlife and water?
All right. So particularly, two things about mosquitoes. Number one, where's the closest place that you're aware of Zika virus being in mosquitoes?
It's in different locations around the world. I think we've heard a lot about it in Central and South America. And people who are traveling can contract that.
Okay, but not in mosquitoes here, I guess, is the point
I'm
trying to...
They're not in the United States. Okay. But if people want to find out more about travel and where the disease is showing up, they can look at on the CDC website. There's a lot of information there about the virus and about where the mosquitoes are that carry it.
Okay, so then the general question more about mosquitoes as an entire realm of different kinds of critters is, and I remember reading or hearing in elementary school on film strips about how they used to pour oil over ponds to keep the mosquitoes from sticking their little breathing tubes up so they would die there. And I thought, well, that's a smart idea. Well, pouring oil on water doesn't seem like such a great idea anymore. So what are some of the ways that we can work against mosquitoes proliferating without resorting to chemicals?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good question. I know that there are specialists. We work with a lot of professionals, whether it's a mosquito abatement district or schools, and there. First of all, you want to identify what type of mosquito, what their behavior is, and then there are different techniques to reduce the breeding numbers, and to educate the public about For instance, in a school grounds and in school in, inside the building, you would want to look at, you know, prevention. So you would look at where is water standing, because it doesn't take very much water for mosquitoes to breed. So if there's buckets or tires or anything like that that is has holding water, standing water in it, you want to remove that. And that can really help reduce the numbers of mosquitoes that are breeding and hatching. And so that's an example. And I just want to, you know, move to schools. So that's something I'm going to be talking about at the conference. It's going to be one of the themes. And that is that NCAP, along with many of our allies, helped to shape and pass a bill in Oregon called the IPM in Schools Bill. And that requires all schools to reduce their use of pesticides and eliminate pesticide use to benefit the health of children and, you know, teachers and all of the people that would be exposed to pesticides. And the schools are required now to have a pesticide or IPM, that's Integrated Pest Management Policy, to reduce and eliminate the pesticide use. So they're looking at things like how do we, care for our grounds? How do we care for our buildings? If doors have, need door sweeps, that's something you put on the bottom of doors so that rodents can't get into the building. And that reduces the use of any kind of using rat bait, for instance. Rat bait can look like candy, and if it's at the level that children are, they could, ingest that, and it's very, very poisonous. So just to, sort of move into what kind of solutions do we have and what can people do in their own communities, and that is to work with your school, ask them about their integrated pest policy, and get on the notification list. So if you have kids and you want to know, are they going to be using pesticides? If so, well, what are the alternatives? And that's an example of when NCAP can help you as a person, an individual, that you can get on our website and get information about. Well, if there are wasp problems, how do we handle those without using chemicals or rodents or ants or anything else? So I think there are a lot of things that people can do along with, I know that in the Ashland area, in the Rogue Valley, there are three Bee City USAs and the first bee campus in the country.
Right. Phyllis Stiles is going to be the next guest right after you.
Right. And Ashland Parks and Rec has also reduced their use significantly of pesticides. And they no longer use pesticides in any public parks. And Southern Oregon University just eliminated all Roundup use. And Ashland schools don't use glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, or other high hazard pesticides. So it's just another example of how we're seeing, there's a lot of positive movement. People are becoming more aware that there are alternatives and that you don't have to reach for pesticides.
Kim LaValle is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the Executive Director of the Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides, or NCAP. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange. If you've got some stories about your own use of pesticides or ways in which you have avoided using pesticides, or some questions for Kim about what proposals she might make about pesticide alternatives, join us on the Exchange. 800-838-3760 is our phone number. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. The bee die-off in Oregon, a couple of them actually a few years ago, were caused by the neonicotinoids. Boyd in Wolf Creek emailed in a question about, given that Ortho has declared a position abandoning neonicotinoids, might activists insist that their favorite retailers get them off the shelves?
That is great, yes. And there's some good news on that front as well. We have... So both Lowe's and Home Depot are changing their policies around neonicotinoids. We like to call them neonics for short. and that is that with from advocacy from citizens, I know that we're part of a national group. It's called the Pollinator Protection Network, and Friends of the Earth and Beyond Toxics, that's also going to be at the conference, are an Oregon-based organization. We're all together working to put pressure on large stores like Home Depot and Lowe's, chains like that. And so Home Depot has removed neonics from 80% of its flowering plants and will complete its phase out in plants by 2018. And that's because of your advocacy. When you write letters and you put pressure, there is response in the marketplace. Lowe's is phasing out neonics in shelf products and plants by the spring of 2019. And just on this note, Jeffrey, we have been working with nurseries in Oregon. Oregon, Washington, and California have a strong nursery industry. So we provide grow plants and provide them for much of the country. And we're raising consumer awareness and demand for neonic-free and organic plants. So the more that people understand that neonics are in plants, their seeds are treated with them, and they uptake into the plant, so they're systemic. They go into the nectar, and so when pollinators come, they can be harmed by the neonicotinoids. And so buying plants that are organic or free of neonics having those plants in your yard, because you want to have a bee-friendly yard, and as a bee-friendly city, you would want to be landscaping, you know, with plants that attract pollinators. So you want to make sure that they're not actually being harmed by those plants. So we actually, on our website, and we'll be talking about this at the conference, we have a Shop Bee Safe Nurseries handout where we surveyed nurseries in Oregon and found that there are nurseries that do not use neonics, and I think that number will be growing because consumers are asking and demanding neonic-free plants. Also, we have a wallet card that you can get from us or on our website, and it's questions to ask your nursery. So you can learn about what neonicotinoids are just in a tiny little wallet card that you can carry in your wallet. And the questions you can ask are your plants or seeds treated with neonics? Do you know which of your suppliers use them? Would you consider removing neonic applications and treated plants from your shelf? So as a consumer, that is a direct relationship that you have with your nurseries, and you can ask them those questions. So there's some tools that we have that can help consumers put pressure in the marketplace and make change by where you spend your dollar.
All right. Kim LaValla is going to be our guest for a couple minutes more here. She's the executive director of NCAP, the Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides. Here's Peter in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, I just have a comment and a question. First of all, maybe you touched on this earlier in the show, but in case you didn't, an important detail about mosquitoes is that they do not like their water to be unsettled, shall we say, like in a fountain. They don't like that kind of water.
They want it distilled water, okay, yeah.
Recirculating, and they do sell it as a product, but a little thing that you put in the water that's, they call them mosquito dunks, and you just set them in there in the water, and they take it in, and it disrupts their digestive system with Bacillus thuringiensis, which is the nature of my question, which I'm wondering if maybe sort of like Roundup, I've always wondered about this over the years, if, you know, back in the early days of Roundup, of course, they said, oh, you could spray this on your breakfast cereal and it would be fine. And now they're changed. The tune has changed.
All right,
and
so it's the same question about BT.
I wonder if that's the same with Bacillus thuringiensis.
Or BT. Thanks for that, Peter. Appreciate it.
That's a very good question. BT, it can be overused and then cause resistance. So that's one issue. You want to understand the type of BT. There's lots of different types. So if you are using that product, you want to understand, you know, how to use it and how not to use it. And I know, for instance, it is used in organic agriculture for pest management. and also for gypsy moth control. And just a little a tidbit here on BT. It is used in certain varieties are used in gypsy moth control. And before there was BTK, which is a certain type of BT, there was a neurotoxic pesticide and insecticide used to control gypsy moth, and that was carbaryl. So we see BT as a safer alternative. And while yet it still is, it's a bio, what we would call an integrated pest management, a biological control, mm-hmm. you still need to be careful about how it's used.
Okay, about a minute and a half left. Let's go to Ed and Eugene. Welcome to the exchange.
Hello.
Hi.
A simple solution to dealing with pests in general is to stop killing their predators. And specifically, inside our home, we allow, for years, we've been allowing spiders into the home. And they don't bother anybody. What they do is, well, the web building type make their webs in the windows. And when we get flies or mosquitoes or anything that flies, they go straight through the window and get caught in there. And the spiders get a meal and our pests are dealt with.
Okay, so be kind to the spiders. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that, Ed. Quick answer from you, Kim, before we hit a break.
Oh, I would agree. I have spiders in my house as well. You just want to make sure you know what type of spiders they are. You know, most spiders are not dangerous, and we don't have a lot of dangerous spiders in Oregon. But, you know, you can identify them by, you know, Googling information from either Extension from Oregon State University or look on our website at www.pesticide.org.
All right, so you probably don't want to encourage black widows to get too comfortable in the house, I'm guessing.
Right.
All right. Kim LaValle is the executive director of NCAP, the Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides, one of several groups represented at this weekend's Pesticides, People, Pollinators, and the Planet Conference, starting Saturday at 8 at Southern Oregon University's Stevenson Union. Kim, thanks for joining us on the exchange.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.